morning, medical education podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva coming to you early morning from Vancouver. A little bit later than I expected, though, because I just discovered that our clocks went back this past weekend, and I have the good fortune today of speaking to the Netherlands, where the clocks haven't changed yet. So after a bit of a panic, I was able to make the allotted time, and I'm happy to have done so because I'm speaking today with Sylvia Mamedi, who is a scientific researcher in the departments of psychology and internal medicine at Erasmus University in Rotterdam. And Sylvia and her colleagues have a paper that's soon to be published in the May issue of Medical Education entitled Reflection as a Strategy to Foster Medical Students' Acquisition of Diagnostic Competence. Sylvia, thank you very much for being with me. I know that you're spanning two parts of the world right now, going back and forth between the Netherlands and visiting your family in Brazil, but very glad you could make time to chat with me.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a great opportunity to share our ideas and discuss our work a little bit more, and I am thankful to you.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I have had a chance to read many of your papers over the years because you're doing work in an area that's of particular interest to me, and I'm happy to finally have a chance to put a voice to the name on your research papers. And I know that in particular in recent years you've been focusing on the development of expertise, and in particular the role that reflection plays in that developmental process. And so maybe I can start by just asking you to tell our listeners why you thought reflection was a key factor and what led you down this path in the first place.
Well, this is an old story. I don't know if you know, but I am not a psychologist by training. I am a physician by training. Mm-hmm. And when I started working with medical education, I met Hank Schmidt, and I started to study the literature on medical expertise. And the focus was on that time on non-analytical reasoning. And this was what Hank taught us when he used it to visit us in Brazil, and I always found I was not very comfortable with it, because as a physician I knew many colleagues who were very good clinicians, very good diagnosticians, and they all were very reflective. So I could not accept, even beginning as a naive PhD student. And I started to study all the literature on experiential learning and how people can learn from experience and the epistemology of professional practice. It became more and more clear to me that reflection should for sure not be the prevalent approach to solve most of the routine problems, but there was a role to be played by reflection. Reflection should indeed happen in uncommon, in unusual problems, and it would indeed lead these professionals who are more able to solve the problems in a better way. And this started the whole process only when I finished my PhD with a set of studies on the role of reflection on diagnostic accuracy. Hank Schmidt thought that he had never believed that it would work, and then he only accepted that it worked when we started to run experimental studies.
Right.
It paid off.
And so maybe I can ask you to pause there and just step back a little bit, because I know reflection is one of those words that gets used many different ways in our literature, and I think you implicitly indicated how it might be different from the analytic, non-analytic distinction of how someone's actually reasoning through a particular patient case. Can you define for our listeners what you think of reflection as being?
Yeah, we have worked in recent years more with reflection in the moment, the diagnostic decision, and not as an instrument to learn from experience, reflection that the physician would engage in later on after the case has passed. So indeed, we have worked mainly with reflection more as a reflective diagnostic reasoning. That's very similar to the analytical reasoning, but as you said, these concepts have been operationalized in so different ways. We have used reflection as operationalized reflection as reflection upon initial hypothesis that comes to doctor mind. There are other ways. For instance, you yourself have made many studies with analytical reasoning as features first, and then go and check all the features that are in the case, and then generate hypothesis, whereas we have used the reflection as try to critically analyze and critically examine the first impressions that you have on the case.
Okay, so the practitioner, the participant in your studies is presented with a case, and the first impression that comes to mind for them is used, but then you give them that instruction to try to think deliberately through that particular diagnostic option that's come to mind. So,
yeah, and we don't have any studies to on that, but it seems to us that a crucial element is to think about what is contradictory, what is discrepant, an information that really goes against your first impressions. And then this could push the physicians to really try to generate alternative hypotheses that they didn't consider before.
Mm-hmm.
So we have tried always to push them to consider information that should be in the case and is not there, clinical findings that are against the initial hypothesis and so on.
So what were Hank's misgivings when you first presented this to him as something that you thought might be beneficial? Do you know why he anticipated that it might not work in the way that you were describing?
The non-analytical reasoning. It's so clear that most diagnoses are made through automatic reasoning, that experienced professionals indeed are able to solve most of the problems by using intuitive judgments based on activation of examples that they have stored in mind, examples of other patients or scripts of diseases. And indeed, we found sometimes that if you push doctors to reflect on simple cases, on cases that are really typical presentations of common diseases, this seems to hurt them. We never get significant results, but it's always borderline.
Okay.
It seems to be really an indication that non-analytical reasoning is really effective. It should be, if not, physicians would not use it so frequently and so well.
Right. And so in this particular paper that's coming out in May, you set up reflection in a deliberate contrast with two other strategies that one might use to try to improve their diagnostic reasoning. One was to try to get them to very deliberately generate the first diagnosis that comes to mind, and one was to try to get them to more systematically generate a differential diagnostic list. Is that a fair description of the two alternative conditions, or how would you describe the particular experimental design that's going to be published soon?
Yeah, we had three conditions. One was to make the immediate decision for the case. The other was to make an immediate decision but generate alternative diagnosis. That's usually what we tell our students to do in the medical school. Now consider alternatives.
Yeah.
And the third one was, again, make a first impression about the case, but then deliberately reflect upon alternative diagnosis and the information that contradicts your hypothesis and so on. The difference was that we tried at this time to use this deliberate reflection procedure to foster the development of scripts of diseases among medical students, to see if by deliberately reflecting on a case in a so structured way, this would help them to form better UNAS scripts that then would help them in diagnosing cases in the future. So it's more reflection as a learning strategy and not only a strategy to improve performance.
Okay, so the instructions around the reflection condition are more aimed at helping them understand or at least think about the links between what they were seeing in a particular diagnosis as opposed to simply generating the list of alternatives in the differential diagnosis condition. Is that right?
Yeah, they had to link the findings in the case with the hypothesis that they generated.
Okay, so you set up three groups of individuals, one in each of those three learning conditions. What did you find?
We found that reflection, to our surprise, apparently disturbed the students in short term, because after the learning phase, they all went through a test phase in which they had to diagnose again different cases of the same diseases, different examples of the same diseases. The students who had reflected during the learning phase had a worse performance than the other two groups. But then reflection paid off after 1 week. After 1 week, they again went through another test with different examples of the same diseases. And the reflection group performed much better than the two other ones indeed.
And so it's actually, you got the rare crossover interaction, it seems, where one group, the reflection group, was not only not performing better in the short term, but was performing worse than the other two groups, and then became better over time. And I've been seeing more and more data that suggests a real dissociation between how one performs immediately after learning and how they perform after a delay has taken place. It's not as simple as the performance decays over time, but rather it seems to decay at a greater rate in some conditions than at others. But what do you think was happening in that intervening time period that led the reflection group to become better after a week's delay?
Yeah, this we didn't have any measure to. It's only our impression. We thought that over time there was a process of knowledge restructuring. The immediate test in short term, maybe because of the excessive load. It's a hard task if you have 8 cases and then you have to go through a reflection in all the cases with so much information. This could have been an excessive cognitive load for them. What would explain the deterioration of performance in the immediate test? But after some time, it seemed that the deeper processing led to really restructuring of the representations of diseases that they had in mind, which showed off in the delayed test. But as you said, this has been shown also in other studies. The benefit of deeper processing only shows at delay. But our next steps now is to try to understand better what indeed what indeed happened.
Right, the outcome of all good research is more questions, right?
Yeah.
I do appreciate you labeling that explanation as speculative, because I do appreciate that you don't necessarily have that piece pinned down yet, but it is a very intriguing phenomenon and does seem to be propping up in a few different circumstances now, and reinforces the importance of building in experimental pieces like you've done with the study of having that follow-up condition. So with your mention of next steps and where this is going, I think that's likely a good time to wrap up this call. And as always, I'm sure our listeners can't have full appreciation for the interesting data and discussion that's in the paper itself. So I'll refer them back to the May 2012 issue of Medical Education, and the paper is entitled Reflection as a Strategy to Foster Medical Students' Acquisition of Diagnostic Competence. And I've been speaking with the first author, Sylvia Mamedi, who's currently in the Netherlands. And thank you once again, Sylvia, for your time and for this interesting work.
Thank you for the opportunity both to talk to you and also publish our work in medical education.
Pleasure's mine. I look forward to the next round. I'm sure readers will as well. So thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.